Hello and welcome back to An Abundance of Not for 2016. Garrett
here.
Where has the time gone?
Well,
we've got 50-some-odd episodes to prove where the time went.
Nice.
That's the voice of Brad for those of you just joining us. Also joined this week by Wade.
Your time is gone by sitting in a plane.
Actually, yeah. And for our new listeners, I am Garrett, the host, hardly with the most. The most of, I don't know. And the
like
most
the
of nothing.
Problem.
I mean, it kind of is, and that's fine. For our new listeners, this will be an explicit podcast. If language is a problem for you, we kindly ask you to get the fuck out. For our recurring listeners, how the fuck are you?
Put some sunglasses on and fucking deal with it.
That's right. God damn it.
Rock on.
Apparently, we're drinking tonight. Brad has wine, I have beer, and Wade is shit out of luck.
Yep, I'm out of my beer. Damn it.
If only there was a way to fix that.
If only. If only in California you couldn't just go buy beer whenever the hell you wanted to.
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay, see, everyone can wait, right? Just.
Yeah. We'll be back in about 15 minutes while Wade gets beer.
Priority straight here. I mean, come on.
Sadly, I am out of tequila, which is kind of a problem for me. And I'm kind of at a crossroads on that. I'd like tequila, but the stuff that I want's $100 a bottle. I don't feel like spending that much, so what do I do?
Holy crap.
Yeah. Luckily,
that
I've never...
be some good shit.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
It's not so fantastic.
Now,
it's
I haven't ever bought one with my own money. I've been gifted two of them, and I have enjoyed every drop of both. But,
is this the Don Julio?
This is the Don Julio 1945... 49, 45-ish year vintage.
45-ish.
It's a special vintage, all right?
Already?
One beer.
It was a good vintage somewhere around there.
Somewhere around that mark.
Somewhere in that ballpark.
But once you have a couple, you no longer care.
1942. It was in 1942, and they aged in a very oaky... Asian oak barrels got a very oaky smell and flavor to it. It is superb. It is not the tequila you shoot. It is the tequila you sip.
Are they aged in old whiskey barrels?
I don't know if they're whiskey or not, but man, if you just pop in the cork and smell in it, you can smell the oaky and like kind of smoky flavors they've got in there. It's
nice.
I'd have to do some more digging on how that's actually aged.
I love when I see like the Grey Goose. I know it's Grey Goose is vodka. And I see like them pouring into just a straight glass. It's like no one straight sips vodka unless you're Russian.
You'd be surprised. People do just vodka and lime or vodka and then you'll have vodka and just vodka tonics and stuff like that. That's really, really basic. Some martinis are pretty much straight vodka.
Yeah.
A slight bit of olive juice maybe and that's about it.
To each their own.
That's right. Brad likes the whiskey, although this is from someone who's only been drinking for a very small period of time compared to most.
Yes. But hey, if you're going to do something, do it well.
That's right. Speaking of whiskey.
Yes.
I saw you went somewhere.
I did go somewhere. Lots of somewheres.
Before you get going, I would like to wish a very public and not that it's belated because I did wish her a happy birthday appropriately, but a happy birthday to your wife.
Oh. The entire podcast community wishes you a happy birthday. Thank you.
Again.
Yes.
This is our aunt's birthday as well.
It is our aunt's birthday as well.
Awesome.
Okay, back to the
May
story.
May I proceed? Yes.
Yes.
And now back to your regular schedule program.
Shoutouts are done.
Okay. Yeah, so we've actually been plenty of somewheres. It has been a week or two,
three.
Yeah. So we were on hiatus, and then I was off for an extra week with the birthdays. Interesting thing about end of year birthdays is by the time our birthdays roll around, everybody's done. They're done with gifts. They're done with presents. They're done with parties. They're done with everything. Just go away. So, you know. Kind of interesting. So we treated ourselves this year after the Christmas festivities. We took a nice long road trip. We took, 3 days, 4 days, 3 days, and went up over the New Year's break. We went hiking. We went hiking.
Have you been drinking that much when you're like 3, 4? I don't know.
Well, see, he's talking to a very private studio audience right now, and he's trying to get his facts straight.
Yes.
That's what's happening.
We have a wonderful in-studio audience tonight of one. Or two, if you count the puppy. So we did, there's some attractions up near Chattanooga, Ruby Falls, and Rock City, and the Incline Railway. The Incline Railway, definitely look it up. That's an interesting one. It is the world's steepest railway with a 74% grade.
Where is this located?
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
It is only a mile long. It goes up the side of the mountain. During the winter when the mountain is iced in, there are times when the incline railway is their only way on and off the mountain, including as a school bus.
Oh, interesting.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
pictures are crazy. I mean, it's carved right into that thing.
It sure is. It's a wild ride. It was a lot of fun. So we spent some time there. Ruby Falls was great. It's an underground waterfall. So you go for a short hike. It wasn't too bad. Into a, it's a actually a commercial cave. It is not public land. It's not a park or a national reserve or anything like that. It's actually owned by somebody.
Oh, wow.
They do tours. It was actually very interesting. Lots of information, lots of cave formations.
Stalagmites and stalactites.
And columns and soda straws, yes.
Wait, do you know the difference between a stalagmite and a stalactite?
One comes from the roof and one comes from the ground.
Nice.
Good job. Give the guy a drink. Anyway.
I'd be more interested in the ore that would be in the cave, though.
There were no creepers.
No, I mean actually legitimate ore. Metal.
Well, didn't see a whole lot.
A lot of that's just sandstone type deposits, not a lot of actual mineable material.
Sandstone and limestone. The underground waterfall was absolutely spectacular. They have it lit up with LED floodlights in various colors, and it runs through a 6-minute show.
Looks awesome.
It is. So if you're in the Chattanooga area, definitely check it out. What's that, Wade?
I have to ask a question. On the railroad, you said you rode it, right?
Yes.
Was it like one of those carnival ride where you get in like a spaceship saucer looking thing and it spins around and you're like nailed to the back of the wall?
No, because of the ingrain? It wasn't that fast. The cars are specially designed. The seats are built with a slight recline already in them. So at the top of the hill, you're only facing forward a little bit. And then by the time you get to the bottom of the hill, you're reclining a little bit.
Oh, okay.
You ever been in one of those? Those things are weird.
Those carnival rides, I love those things. Yeah. They're sweet.
But really neat system. There's two cars on the track, and they counterbalance each other.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's actually a very gentle ride.
That's cool.
Yep. So from there, we meandered further and did a tour of, and this is the one that you were referring to, we did Jack Daniel's Distillery.
Yes, that's the one I did. I was
absolutely
referring to.
Absolutely fascinating place.
Wait, do you know the interesting fact about the Jack Daniel's brewery? Mainly the county it's located in?
It has an underground waterfall?
Negative.
Nice try, though.
Maybe accurate, but not the fact we were looking for.
No, I don't. Go ahead.
It's a dry county.
Yes.
You are not.
Seven Hells?
So the main brewery for one of the biggest whiskey-producing companies in the country, you're not allowed to drink in that county.
It is the biggest whiskey producer in the world, not just the country.
Shut up.
Seriously.
It's not like you went on some tour or something.
I know, right? Hold on, I've got the handout.
Why do they believe there should be, like, just putting a bunch of middle fingers on top of that building? Just be like, screw you all.
Fuck you.
So, fascinating place. Obviously, I'm not going to make the entire podcast about the whiskey, but if you're in the Chattanooga area and get a chance to swing by Lynchburg, definitely recommend it. The tour is free, which is
cool.
Astounding, yeah. Unless you are over 21 and decide you want to do the sampling as well, in which case even that's reasonable. It was $12.
Oh yeah, god, that's yeah, a great wow. deal.
So you get either way, you get the full tour, and then if you've paid for the sampling at the end, they take you into a room and seeing as it's a dry well, it's a dry county, so they're not allowed to serve you much, but you get to have a little sampling. On our tour, they did 5 different whiskeys. Altogether, all the samplings made maybe 3/4 of a shot.
Oh, wow. So maybe. It's just a taste.
It's just a taste. But it was really interesting because they give you lots of information on things to look for. Jack Daniel's is a famous sipping whiskey. That was how Mr. Jack designed it. So they encourage you, drink it how you like, but they encourage you to sip it and the kind of things to look for in the smells and the flavors.
Well, I'm sure like most breweries, they've got, you know, grades of their product that some are definitely, you don't dilute with anything.
And then
you've got the cheaper stuff that, you know, that's the stuff you mix with your Coke and, or, you know, whatever, you know, Bourbon Sevens and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I wouldn't recommend you go out and buy the cheapest bottle of Jack Daniel's and you sip it and think you're doing something. But I wouldn't recommend that you buy the most expensive one and pour Coke in it either. So
right. Well, interestingly, though, their whole motto is that every day they make it the best they can. So your extremely low grade, they call it their green label, is only sold in a few locations and mainly to people that are mixing, you know, bars that mix it.
Yeah.
Your basic, you know, the black label that everybody recognizes as Jack Daniel's is their good quality anyway. So, you know, enjoy it.
It's at least a good motto. It's not like, we just half-assed it a couple days. Just like, whatever.
Know, we just threw it in, saw what came out. It was crap, but we sold it anyway. I guess the most fascinating thing for us, for me at least, I won't speak for my beautiful wife, but the most fascinating thing for me was how environmentally friendly Jack Daniel's is. So they're not afraid. We did the World of Coke Museum, and Coke is all about their big secret, right? They can't tell you their recipe. It's all top secret. And there's a big hush. Right. Jack Daniel's doesn't care. We use corn, we use rye, we use barley, we put it in here, here's how we mix it, here's how we brew it, here's how we do it. Oh yeah, our big secret, we'll tell you what it is, because you can't get it anyway. They have their own private spring that comes out of a mountain cave.
Oh, nice.
It's a bunch of little orange men.
Loompa, loompa, doobody-doo.
But so,
we've got another bourbon for you.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Thank you.
So the thing that differentiates bourbon from whiskey is it's charcoal filtered.
Oh, okay. I was wondering about that.
Yeah. So Jack Daniel's is essentially, it meets all the qualifications for a bourbon, but then they take it and they filter it over charcoal. So the thing that they stressed is when they're done with the entire process, 98% of what comes in is recyclable.
Nice.
So the grain mash that they make into the initial alcohol, once they drain the alcohol out of it, is actually a spectacular cattle feed. So they sell that to the farmers for the cows and the sheep and the goats and, you know, llamas, whatever.
Yep.
The charcoal gets fully reclaimed, and that gets sent off to, the charcoal briquette manufacturers, and gets turned into charcoal grill fuel.
Nice.
And, you know, the barrels, they only use their barrels once, and then they get recycled into, you know, planter pots and...
Really? They only use them once?
They only use them once.
That's surprising.
every time it gets every new batch of whiskey gets put into a brand new oak barrel.
I wonder what the rationale behind that is. You'd think that, you know, maybe I don't know enough about the process, but
sure.
I would think those would be something that could be used over time repeatedly because, you know, if anything, the whiskeys soak into the wood a little bit and they pull out aspects from that. And I don't
Correct.
Know.
Correct. And that's exactly why they don't reuse them. So as the whiskey ages in the barrels, it does interact with the oak. It pulls flavors out of the oak. There are some remnants left in the oak, but you've pulled, you know, the best parts out in that first time, so never use them.
Got it.
So I'm updating the Abundance of Not Travel Guide. Would you recommend the brewery?
I would definitely recommend the distillery tour.
Five out of five stars.
Five out of five.
Okay, so I'm looking at Jack Daniel's website. Now, I am very much not a whiskey fan. I've tried it. I respect it. I don't like it.
Absolutely.
But on their website, they've got pretty much five key products. They've got Gentleman Jack.
Yes.
They've got the Tennessee Honey.
Mm-hmm.
The number seven, the charcoal, what they call the charcoal mellowed.
Yes.
You got the Fire, which is their version of... Fireball. It's a cinnamon whiskey.
But don't say that when you're there.
Oh, it's like Fireball? You're out.
No, it's not.
And then you have the single barrel.
Yes.
Now, try them all today. Drinking responsibility.
Were all those options that you were able to taste at the sample?
Yes, they were the five that we sampled.
And oh, wow. What was your takeaway from that experience?
My takeaway is, depending on what you like, my favorite is the Tennessee Honey. Mm-hmm. I like that sweeter drink. The Tennessee Fire was definitely good, would be great mixed in cider.
Okay.
That cinnamon fire.
We have cider here.
There you go. go pick yourself up a bottle of Tennessee Fire. Anyway, Old Number 7, the Black Label, is a mixed, it's a multi-barrel whiskey. So they pick different barrels and they blend them to make that. And that way they can keep, because each barrel has a slightly different flavor.
Sure.
So by blending them, they're able to keep consistency across batches.
Yeah.
Whereas the single barrel comes from a single barrel that is hand-selected by the master distiller.
Wouldn't that be a job?
Wouldn't it, though? Jack, it was the Gentleman Jack that was double distilled or double filtered.
Okay.
So they take it, they charcoal filter it. All their whiskeys are the Old Number 7. That's where it starts.
Yep.
And then where does it go from there? So Gentleman Jack gets the charcoal filter. Trying to remember the exact process. Gets charcoal filtered, then they blend it, I think, and then certain amounts get drawn out and charcoal filtered again for a smoother taste.
So if you're going to go out and buy a bottle today, you would buy Tennessee Honey and then followed by which?
If I was going to buy a bottle today, definitely Tennessee Honey would be number one. I think my number two is just plain old Black Label number seven.
Fair enough.
It's a good taste. It blends well. You know, Jack and Coke. It's a good mixer, but if you wanted to sip it, it definitely sips well as well.
Very cool. Well, good to
so
know.
So this has been an abundance of whiskey.
That's right. No, it's good to know. Again, I enjoy processes like that. I enjoy kind of the craftsmanship that go behind the scenes of some of the stuff that kind of gets lost.
Absolutely.
You know,
Devil's cut and the angel's cut?
Well, not so much, but it's just, you know, whether it's whiskey or whether it's tequila or whatever it is, the process is interesting to me.
And the fascinating thing about this is, you know, the whole resurgence, I suppose, of craft beers.
Yep.
And you know, microbrews and stuff like that. And the tour guide said that they often get questions about how they feel about micro distillation and microbrewery. And he said they take offense to that because the whole thing with microbrew is it's handcrafted and it's done, you know, with care, and he said all their whiskey is done that way.
Just because they're big doesn't mean they've lost the quality.
Exactly.
And that's the misconception is, you know, a lot of big companies do sacrifice quality because they're worried about the buck. But
right.
I feel like the alcohol industry, at least, you know, things like whiskey and things like your tequila stuff, where there are definitely different tiers of the product. Mm-hmm. You've got the mixer label, you've got the medium of the road label, and you've got the higher end label.
Yep.
I feel that this is an industry that, regardless of how big the company is, there is still, at least at some stage in the process or some branch of the product line,
yep,
that there's that care still involved. You have to have that, to me, at least.
Oh, absolutely. So. And, you know, they mix their own ingredients there on site. They have their own spring there on site.
See, they're big enough to where they can afford to take that care. That's,
absolutely.
That's one of the differences, you know. This is an old story, but I remember dealing with a customer where he came in. This is a guy that owned hotels in like Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, shat money.
Yep.
And he walked in the grungiest t-shirt and just whatever shorts and just, you know, you look at him and you think this guy's unassuming unless you knew who you were talking to. And it's one of those things like if you're on the bottom of the totem pole, you try to dress as well as you can, but you're not necessarily dressing in a suit because you're not at that level yet. Then you get to that middle of the road workplace where you are dressing in a suit and you're dressing professional, but you still report to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get that next level up where you don't report to anybody and you can afford to not put on the show.
Right.
And that's where Jack Daniel's is, you know, they can afford to own the land. They can afford to have the private spring. They can afford to grow their own, you know, crops if they should decide to, or have their private type of partnerships here and there. They're not subjected to other economic or corporate sort of politics of other companies.
Yep. They're charcoal. They don't buy. They buy the wood and they burn it themselves. They have, you know, people that specialize just in that. They have their own master brewer or master distiller whose job is to ensure that everything's the same. They've only had a handful in the history of the company. It is a long-term position.
What's your job, Bill? I burn things.
Chief charcoal officer.
Yep.
CCO. Very good. Well, holy Absolutely. Crap, this has been about 12 plus minutes of strictly Jack Daniels, which is fine. It's been more?
Yeah, it's been more.
That's
so,
fine.
It's been quite a bit.
One more thing I do want to touch on. Over that break, we progressed on from there up to Kentucky, which is bourbon country then.
Yep.
Big time bourbon country. And we stayed overnight in Louisville in a really nice hotel. I wasn't sure about it at first. I'm not a big fan of the older style hotels, but this was really pretty. And we come to find out that it was one of Al Capone's favorite hangouts during Prohibition.
Huh.
The hotel bar is one of the top 50 bars in the world.
It a top bar in, you know, top 50s bar?
So,
is it prices? Is it service? Is it style? Is it atmosphere? Like,
it's definitely not prices.
You're paying for this experience.
You are paying for this experience. It was not unreasonable, but it's not where you're going to go and get a cheap drunk. The lights were low. The atmosphere was nice. It was a very classy bar.
Did you say more of a lounge experience than the bar scene?
Yes. Definitely more of a lounge experience.
They have an actor come in an old style suit. Go, you want to make some extra money?
Boy, do I have a deal for you! Louisville. It's the heart of bourbon country. So you open up the drinks list, and there were three pages of three columns each of bourbons.
Jesus.
You know, you could order a wine if you wanted to. They had a few beers. They had a couple whiskeys, but this was a bourbon bar.
Yeah.
I mean, everything from, I think the cheapest glass was about $7, and I found a drink on there for $170.
Does not surprise me.
Yeah. So wide range, but
there goes the expense report atmosphere. Budget.
You think I can slide that one through? So, but good atmosphere. So it was great. It was a great New Year's break for me.
Nice. Very good. One thing I wanted to touch on the New Year's break, we'll jump into, we'll see what else is going on. We'll move on here. But a daughter and I went archery shooting for the first time on Thursday in a long time. And my bow that I have, it's a wooden, what they call a riser. So with recurve bows, you can either have a one-piece bow where it's all part of the same, mold per se. Or you have what's called a takedown bow or a three-piece bow, which is what I have, where the limbs, which is the part that flexes and contains the tension, can be removed from what they call the riser, the area that you grab, for storage purposes or traveling and whatnot. Well, my riser is made of multiple layers of wood laminated together and then shaped and bent and shaped. Well, the lamination on a couple layers is starting to come apart. And they said usually that happens when you dry fire a bow. Most people don't realize this, is that when you pull a bow back and you build up that tension, if you don't have an arrow to transfer that energy into, it then has to get dispersed through the structure of the bow if you're doing a full release. And very, very bad for the bow. You can damage it. I have not done that with the bow. I was educated early on. But I called the manufacturer. It's too old for them to do anything with. It's a cheap bow as far as bows go. It's $150, but more money now, than I have available right now to replace it. So my brain, as it is, well, can I just make this? Can I find a way to craft a substitute for this piece? I'd like a metal one, so I could probably do something with aluminum. I wonder if I know someone with a machine shop. Can I get one milled? Should I try to cast it? All that stuff. So I'm kind of in the process now of brainstorming of how to maybe go about taking the one that I have as a template and try and crafting a replacement for it.
That should be interesting.
Yeah. One guy's like, well, what about carbon fiber? I said, well, I thought about that, but the amount of carbon fiber I'd have to buy to build up the thickness of this piece and then just shape it back down would cost more than buying a new bow. So, yeah, that's definitely.
What about fiberglass? Would that have the tension or the strength?
It probably would if I did it right. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure how well fiberglass will hold up, though, against the tension.
Sure.
The competition bows are cast or milled out of, I believe, a pretty high-grade aluminum. And so I'm kind of thinking of trying that route and seeing what happens. But again, still in the process. I'm going to try to get the existing piece vacuum formed so I can create a mold. And then I can maybe fill that mold with an expanding foam and use that as a casting material, a casting template. So we'll see how it goes. Something that I'm brainstorming on. I haven't taken any steps to do anything one way or the other aside from just thinking about it and doodling a little bit, because I would have to do some reshaping on it to remove material. Otherwise, it'll be way too heavy. In an aluminum form, anyway. So
starting a new project.
Starting a new project. And if anyone knows me, they know that I start a lot of projects.
I didn't want to say anything.
I finish very few. That's my obsessive impulsive disorder that I have.
Yeah,
I obsess over things, I impulse over it, and then I obsess over something else. So, welcome to my world. Aside from that, New Year's
gonna have a hobby, right?
What's that?
Everybody's got to have a hobby.
my hobby list is growing. aside from that, New Year's on this end was very quiet. We tried to watch the ball drop. The essentially would be the West Coast feed for local time zone, and didn't necessarily make it. Kind of faded in and out. The daughter fell asleep at 11:30. Kind of woke up right as the ball dropped, which was fine. But she was lights out and was in bed by about 12:02. So that was New Year's. Don't like going out. Too many people doing too much stupid shit.
Yeah.
I'd rather just avoid it. Yeah. I don't need to be a victim on New Year's Eve.
Yep.
So it's safer to drink in the house.
And cheaper.
Way, way cheaper.
So that's it for me. Wade, to you until we move on.
Yeah, well, yeah, for me, I think not really much except for kind of a little tech upgrade. I got Chromecast 4 days now?
Yeah. Saturday, so yeah.
For those who aren't knowledgeable, this is a little device that you plug into the HDMI port of your TV and then plug it in to a thing into an outlet because HDMI doesn't do power. And you are able to then stream Hulu, Netflix, HBO Go, YouTube, Pandora, all those entertainment apps from either your cell phone or your tablet to your TV. Basically turning your TV into like a pseudo smart TV.
And what we were hoping you could do was be able to connect it to your computer and use it as a potential use from your computer, but you ran into some complications with that.
Yeah, it's to download like a Google Cast app, and it's like every time I try to do it, it just goes, "Oh, we lost the connection," and then reload the page, checking again. "Oh, we lost connection." It's like, you know what? All right, I've got Hulu, HBO Go, Netflix, Pandora, whatever, all at my fingertips.
YouTube.
Yeah, you know what I mean. But still. You know, so it's not like, oh no, what am I going to do?
Are you enjoying it so far?
Yeah, it's very easy to install and set up. You know, plug it in there, plug it in there, and go through your Wi-Fi. And then, you know, access all your entertainment things and go forth.
Yeah, I mean, for $35, I mean, you can't beat it from a smart TV conversion, so to speak. Way cheaper than Roku, and I'm sure Amazon Fire is about $100 or something like that too. So for $35, I mean, how can you beat it?
Mm-hmm.
It's got no brains. It's just essentially a Wi-Fi receiver from whatever's sending it the signal.
Whatever device you're telling it to send a signal to the Chromecast. So I've been pretty much sitting on, you know, binge watching a couple shows for a couple days now. Play a couple games and turn and go, oh, so that's what's happening. Okay.
Nice.
Check in with the world.
No, not checking the world. I was checking into like the show.
Nice.
Very cool. All right, well, let's jump into some movies then.
Really? We're not going to go into the F. Fox scenario again?
Okay. Well, since you brought it up.
Yep. I'm going to make people work with this.
This is going to be a whole fucking episode of personal shit. I swear to God.
No kidding.
Sunday,
be our most listened to.
Sunday being the football day, as per usual. Hold on, we'll back up. So 2 weeks ago, I think I said this on last week's podcast, but I'm not sure. We stumbled across a local Seahawks bar. Our family, extended family, lives in Washington. Our folks moved down here 82-ish. So we're Seattle fans. We're Seattle fans by blood. And we stumbled on a Seahawks bar based on word of mouth from another guy that we met at a different restaurant. And so we gave that a shot 2 weeks ago. Good experience, packed. I mean, we got there maybe half an hour before the game started, and we could not find a table. We ended up meeting a nice couple, and they let us kind of piggyback with them, which was really cool, and really enjoyed the game and had a good time. Well, this past weekend, Fox, in its glory, was airing the Seahawks versus the Arizona Cardinals game. Luckily, it was on standard Fox and not one of their Fox Sports, you know, Net West bullshit. So we were able to turn on the TV and be able to watch the game. So we thought.
I get home 20 minutes later.
Midway through the third quarter, Fox decides, since Seattle is destroying the Arizona Cardinals by roughly 30 points, they said, "You don't want to watch this blowout, do you? Here, watch the Raiders-Kansas City game. You'll like that, right?" Fuck you, Fox. Fuck you. I turned in to the TV. The channel said Seahawks versus Cardinals. Not Seahawks versus Cardinals until we decide otherwise. Fuck you. Seahawks won 36-6.
Wow, that was a blowout.
Yeah. Oh, but which is crazy because Arizona clobbered up on Green Bay the week before, and everyone was saying we were going to have a hard time against Arizona's defense, especially since we didn't have our running backs. Marshawn Lynch was still out recovering from a sports surgery, and Rawls, who was our second string, who's had an amazing season, by the way, injured or broke his ankle, something like that, some weeks back. We've been on our third string now for a couple weeks. But Seahawks came out to play. Offense was solid. Defense, put this into perspective. Every time the Seahawks had the ball up until the point we couldn't watch anymore, they scored, with the exception of one missed field goal attempt. Every time the offense had the ball, they put points on the board.
So you're talking about your third string running backs?
Yes.
We finished on our seventh string quarterback.
Ouch! This is Indy, correct? Not
This is Indy, yes. Yeah. Not Atlanta. Indianapolis Colts, our banner quarterback, obviously. Luck has been out for probably half the season with a kidney injury. Our second string went in. He played for a couple games, came out with a broken rib. Our third string went in, played for a game, came out with a torn Achilles tendon.
Oof, that's a bad one.
So our fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh string quarterbacks, on the days they played, had been members of the Colts club for, on average, about 4 days.
Hey, here, kid, here's a jersey. Get out in the field. Let's see what you got.
Was it made of jelly? But it's like, we couldn't take a hit from them.
You know how to play, right? Here's a football. Go. Just play.
Hey, get back here. You forgot your helmet.
So, funny. We did not make the playoffs, and it's probably for the best.
That's hilarious. So now we get to play Minnesota, which, you know.
Wild card or
wild? We solidly earned the wild card, if that makes sense.
Yep.
We got the position, and then
you're the first runner up.
Yeah, exactly. But we can still fight till the end, and that's what we're going to do. Word is that Marshawn Lynch is supposed to be back here next week, and he's been doing extremely well. He's been training with MMA fighters. He's been putting in 10 to 12 hours of workouts daily, and they said last week that he has stopped running around people and started running through people again. And that's exactly the running back that that we need right now, because we didn't have much of a running game at all. Our third string got a couple good plays, put some yardage on the board, but it wasn't somebody that you really went to change the tempo with the offense. And we need that dynamic aspect of the game again.
He's the running back we need, just not the one we deserve.
So, fuck Fox. We didn't get to finish the game. You know, people tune. I don't understand the mentality. I mean, is there that many people that watch football just because it's football?
Yes.
You fucking idiots.
I love that we can actually, like, oh, here, they're losing. Here, sit through it. Here. Oh, they're winning? Yeah, we're going to go to another game. See ya.
Yeah, we're going to go to someone else because we don't care. Fuck.
All about the money.
That's right. So we got to figure out if they're playing, if it's going to be on TV again. Or if we venture back up to the Seahawk bar and watch it there. So, don't know yet. We'll figure it out.
All right, movies.
Movies!
This is like halfway through the podcast.
We are over halfway into the movies. We're
two-thirds of the way done. Let's go to movies.
That's right. Let's go to movies. We'll take up the other 20 minutes, and then we'll be done. not necessarily. Coming out this week, 2.5 movies to mention here. Number
two
one,
and a half?
The Revenant. Yes, 2.5. The Revenant. This is Leonardo DiCaprio, 79% critic rating. It's inspired by true events. Revenant is an immersive and visceral cinematic experience, capturing one man's epic adventure of survival and the extraordinary power of the human spirit in an expedition of the uncharted American wilderness.
And the bear will get the Oscar.
That's right. This is rated R. They are saying this is one of, if not the best performance DiCaprio has put on screen to date. It's also featuring Tom Hardy, aka Bane, aka Mad Max, etc. among a few others, but those are definitely the two big ones you want to be looking for. Number two this week is The Forest. This is with Natalie Dormer, who you may recognize the name from The Hunger Games, or more importantly, Game of Thrones. This is a movie about... I'm getting messages right now. There's shenanigans in the background. Disregard. This is a movie about apparently a forest in Japan where people go to commit suicide and then spirits take hold. Against the backdrop of Japan's Okinawa Desert, or forest, I'm sorry, where people go to the end to very, end their lives, different. An American woman braves the mysterious uncharted terrain to search for her missing sister. This is rated PG-13, no critic rating at this time. But if you're kind of a fan of horror and mystery, this is definitely down your alley.
And I have three movie tickets. Guess what I'm doing tomorrow?
There you go. Number three,
the sisters.
That's the other one for Wade. The half mention here, I think, is going to be a limited release or limited distribution in the theaters. It is Sherlock, The Abominable Bride. This is not the Junior Sherlock Holmes. This is the Benedict Cumberbatch BBC Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, really?
Fathom Events and BBC Worldwide are thrilled to bring Sherlock, The Abominable Bride, to the big screen for a special two-night event on Tuesday, January 5th. That was yesterday at 7:30. And again, Wednesday today, January 6th at 7:30, depending on local theaters. It's unrated critic rating here, but I think it's rated R as far as content goes. Benedict Cumberbatch plays Sherlock. Martin Freeman, a.k.a. Bilbo Baggins, is Dr. Watson. And a few other notable names. So if you're a fan of the TV show, you may have been more aware of this. I'm sure it will hit other opportunities down the road. But be aware if you're a BBC Sherlock fan.
Speaking of which, I would love to see Robert Downey mixed with Journey. That would be funny to watch.
That would be interesting. He's enough of a character
Robert
to pull
Downey
it off.
Jr. front singing with Journey.
I don't know how well he can sing, but he is a character.
The character alone would be funny, which would be easy to do.
So in the box office, I don't know if anyone's surprised here. Star Wars pulls in an additional $90.2 million.
Really?
Bringing its domestic box office total up to $742 million.
No drinks.
Domestic. You want to go to worldwide, global?
Let's go international.
Okay. Interns, go figure out the international.
number and two, here I thought you had it.
No way. You're lucky I had the 742. Man. Give me too much credit. Number two this week, Daddy's Home pulls in $29.2 million. Number three, The Hateful Eight pulls in $15.7 million. Number four, Sisters pulls in $12.8 million. I think an honorable mention, a movie came out this past weekend. A little bit further down the box office is Concussion with Will Smith, pulled in $7.8 million.
So. Okay. Interns. What did you say your domestic was?
$742 million.
Okay, so that has been updated again.
Okay.
Domestic sits at $758 million. Foreign sits at $799 million, both of them with some change. Worldwide equals $1.557 billion.
Drink. All that against a $200 million budget.
Yeah.
I'd say they're slightly profitable.
Just a little.
Just. After marketing costs and things like that, it's a little iffy, you know. $1.5 billion can be spent really quick.
You know, just after Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Ish. So did you guys see the funny picture online about the Simpsons projecting that seeing the future?
I've seen various
I've seen a lot of things so of the Simpsons think of like hinting at things that come to be
true.
So
there was a picture, and I have to believe it's legitimate, not photoshopped after the fact.
Oh, I think I've seen
this,
yeah.
But it shows, like, the Simpsons-esque Hollywood scene, and the two movie posters entering into the Hollywood gates are an Alvin and the Chipmunks movie and a Star Wars movie.
Nice.
The two movies released on the same weekend.
Now, there's, like, a lot of things in The Simpsons where it's, like, they have a gravestone of, like, Gary Oldman and had, like, the exact date that he died. It was, like, before he died, though. It was, like, okay.
Gary Oldman's not dead, though.
No, what was it then? I forget who it was. It was an actor, and they had him, like,
so,
the date.
Maybe he committed suicide on that day to make it true.
Yeah, probably.
So, just for reference sake, there is only one movie that has grossed more in its lifetime.
Avatar.
Number one spot still holds with Avatar, but only by 2 million.
Yeah, that'll be broken tomorrow. Tomorrow at 8 a.m., Star Wars Episode 7 will hold the record for not only the fastest grossing movie, but the highest grossing of all time. And a show of hands of, you know, who is surprised. That's what I thought.
Yeah, no one.
Yeah,
no one.
Exactly. All right. So that does it for movies. If anything, I'm going to try to get out and see Concussion with Will Smith. That does look very intriguing. Again, some of the politics behind the NFL world. I very much like the movie Draft Day with Michael Keaton.
Jennifer Garner
along with Dennis Leary and a few others, because it was the business behind football and not football itself, and I enjoy kind of that stuff in the background, so I do
want
to try.
Now you're actually a football fan as well.
I'm a Seahawks fan. Fuck the rest of that shit.
He likes looking behind the smoke and mirrors of how the trick is done.
That's right
It's all rigged, just like wrestling. Anyway,
wait, what? Wrestling's fake?
Oh god,
it's not true.
You can see some of those things where it's like, yeah, he completely missed. Come on.
I like the ones where they lift each other up, and you can see the one guy jumping in the air to help the other guy lift him up. It's funny.
Hold on. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. All right. To the news. Let's see if we can. We're probably only going to get one in, and we've talked about some of these in the green room. What do you guys think we should address before we close out?
I'm going completely off reservation because here's one that I did not cover and we've been on hiatus, and this is a PSA.
Okay, let's do that then.
Unmanned aircraft. FAA has handed down their ruling and they will need to be registered.
Yes, this is true.
So if you have a drone, UAV, quadcopter, hexcopter, octocopter, whatever. If it weighs more than half a pound and less than 55 pounds, you must go to the FAA's website and register it. It is $5 to register, but if you get in before midnight Eastern time on January 20th of 2016, they will refund the $5 registration fee.
I believe the fine for this to not register is something in the neighborhood of $20,000.
Yeah, so definitely get out and do it. This is a major thing. Now, along the same vein, the FAA has released an app. It is out and released for iOS. It is available as a beta test for Android users. It's called Before You Fly. And it can either GPS lock on your current location, or you can put it into planning mode where you can tell it where you want to fly, and it will give you any and all flight restrictions on that area.
200 feet up above a nude beach. With a very good zoom.
Well, see, that's an interesting thing, Wade. You say that like it's not right.
I know, it's horrible.
Technically, if people are going out in public in the nude, even if it's a nude beach, they're essentially surrendering their right to privacy.
You might think that.
So more or less, you're kind of not in the wrong to film, What you would be in the wrong, though, is to rebroadcast that.
Without their consent. And
correct. So it gets a little iffy, you know, because it sounds inappropriate, but people who do that are essentially surrendering their right to privacy to some degree.
You might think that.
Yeah, well, yeah.
To some degree.
See if it holds up in a court and see what happens. Yeah. But listen, let your best judgment, and realizing that most people don't have best judgment. So if you don't know, research. But yeah, if you're thinking about getting a drone or whatever, there is now the FAA standard registration, and there's also an insurance group. I think it's like $60 to $70 a year for an insurance package for your drone. So if you crash into like a car or some or a person or whatever, you have some sort of coverage protection. That's not everything's out of pocket.
Yeah, not a bad idea if you're flying in public.
Yep, I agree.
So check it out, FAA.gov/UAS, as in unmanned aircraft system, /registration. Link will be in the show notes.
Yep, I did try to register, but it sends you a confirmation email to create a login, and it took it like 6 to 8 hours to get me the email.
Perfect.
So I haven't had the ability to go back and finish up. But
sure. Part of this is you will be required to label. You will be given a registration number, and you must label your flying device.
Yep. I would print out a copy of the completed registration. I'm assuming there's a form or a receipt, something like that, and keep that in your flight gear so that if you're ever questioned, you have documentation on it. So speaking of drones, sorry to cut you off here real quick, Wade, but I saw a really interesting kind of story and video where in Japan, police have implemented essentially law enforcement drones equipped with nets, and they drone fish. They see civilian drones if they're in an area they're not supposed to be, and they launch their drone with the net, and they snare, entangle the civilian drone, and will take possession of it for, I'm not sure if they confiscate it completely or just hold it for a period of time. But that's what Japan is doing in major areas.
That'd be a fun job.
Yeah, right? What do you do?
What do you do?
I'm a drone snatcher. You do what? Beg your pardon?
I hunt down civilian drones and use mine as shoot them with nets.
They don't shoot them with nets. They dangle a large net from them because they're using like either a large hex or octocopter. A weighted net that hangs below them, and they just fly over and entangle the other drone. Mm-hmm. Then they land and they detangle it and confiscate it.
I go drone fishing. That's my job.
My job is a drone fisher. So listen, be smart with your drone. Register it. Document it. Don't be one of those that ruins it for everybody else. I would also like to specify, I believe this drone unmanned aerial vehicle registration also applies to aircraft, not just multi-rotors.
I believe you are correct.
So anything that you're flying that's unmanned that falls within the weight category needs to be registered. So if you're a model plane flyer, you're not exempt. Sorry for the drone people that may have ruined it for you
or made you go through this step. But I was just about to point that out. You know, the model aircraft community has existed for a good, 20 something years, 30 years?
It's been a long time.
It has been a long time, and it only took a couple years of these idiot drone fuck ups to ruin it for everybody. So thanks for that, guys.
And I attribute that to the drones that you buy and can fly out of the box, the Parrot drones, the DJI Phantoms, the, you know, the ones that are big enough to fly outdoors with minimal issue to wind and turbulence, but that you don't spend any time building.
Well, you don't spend any time building, and you don't spend any time caring. I mean, the exactly. Old model aircraft community, you spent lots of money, and it took a lot of time to get used to how to fly it. These things, like you said, you take them out of the box, you put batteries in them and away you go without any care or regard or thought for, you know, anybody else.
And I'm not trying to bash those people. It's just that they don't know. You know, they're not involved in a community to research something and to know that this part works better with that, or I need these motors and these props to carry the weight that I want to do. They just open a box, turn it on, and go fly. And they don't realize that there's regulations, the areas you can't fly, the altitude limitations that put other people at harm. And they just go out and fly without knowing that they need to know. And,
you know, I can see some of that, but I'm going to counter your defense there with there's a lot of... Huh?
Don't say common sense, because we know that's not there.
Well, that's my point, though. There's a lot of fucking idiots out there. Who in their... Well, they're not in their right mind. Bingo. Who thought it was a good idea to fly your little model aircraft that you just took out of the box in an airport? Who thought it was a good idea to fly it in the way of firefighting aircraft? Who thought it was a good idea to fly it in the way of medevac air? I mean, come on.
Again, you keep saying who thought, and I think the appropriate factor is that no one ever did. Those that care are aware. Those that are, you know, those that are blind to it don't know that they need to know something they don't know.
That's going to be like the new self-help campaign. Those aware will care.
That's right. Be aware.
So. Care.
Thanks for screwing it for everybody, but, you know, this is the way it is now. The rule has been made. Check it out, FAA.gov. Link in the show notes. Register your quad or your aircraft of any kind.
And I believe that app, once they fully flesh it out, will show hotspot areas where you definitely should not be flying.
Yes.
There are websites out there. I don't know exactly what they are that do show a very strict no fly zone, typically around your airports and international airports, things like that. And I believe
government buildings.
And I don't recall, we talked about this before on the residential limitations. We talked that there was a bill that they were trying to pass that pretty much said you can't fly, without saying you can't fly in a residential area, saying that you're really not supposed to be flying in a residential area. So do your research, know where you can fly, know when you can fly, and register yourself for your own financial protection.
Agreed.
All right. That's a good one. We are at 57 minutes, so we will wrap this up. We do thank everybody for listening. We do apologize if it was too much personal for you, but not really. I mean,
go get yourself an Oculus Rift. They're on sale, pre-ordered for $600 US.
There you go. Oculus Rift available.
Have fun.
Keep in touch with us on Twitter at AbundanceKnot. I think we're nearing the 600 follower mark, which is awesome. We would really appreciate you popping over to our YouTube channel and subscribing there. We could use a little bit more help on that front. And other than that, hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/abundance.not.
Show us some love there. Click the like button.
That's right. You can also find Wade on Twitter at AAONCWAL, CWAL 599.
Yep. And it's going for that. Keep on gaming.
That's a wrap.